SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and Tony Black is going to join us, and so is Dan Ward, and what a pleasure this is. Tony's in the background, and Dan, of course, synonymous with the right now with the last several years with Jerry Hollendorfer as his number one guy, and for years before that with the late, great Bobby Frankel. And Dan, what a pleasure.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You guys got a big weekend. When it gets to be this time of year, every weekend's a big weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're looking forward to some stakes on Saturday. Looks like we've got some good chances.
Obviously, the topic at large is some of the winter issues, some of the training interruption and the race interruptions. How do you have to adjust when it comes to this kind of a scenario?
Been pretty happy working horses on the training track, and we sent a few to Los Al to work. And so far, so good. We haven't missed anything.
Everybody pretty stayed on course.
Right on course.
Well, and you know, you also we see you often here and on Del Mar and so forth, but you'll go on the road frequently too, right? With as the number one shipping lad, as they say, abroad.
Not as much as I used to with Bobby, but on occasion, you know, make the trip when Jerry's here. If he goes on the road, then I don't go. I have to stay here.
Yeah,
but. You know, I like it, and I've been everywhere. So I know everybody everywhere. So
absolutely.
How long have you been with? Because I remember Dan when I first started up at Golden Gate Fields, and Bobby had some horses up there, and Dan was up there, and then lo and behold, he went to work for Jerry. Has it been? It's been more than 10.
12.
So 12 years with Jerry, and you know, not a. You know, obviously, they're different people, but along the same lines. I mean, you know, they're winning is the only option type of thing, and you know, they're top class guys. They get emotional when things happen, and let's Jerry's the famous we'd watch him up at Golden Gate Fields, and you know he'd have won three or four during the day, and that ace race would come along, he'd lose by a head, and he would kick up. I'd never seen anybody kick a bucket. You know, down by the winner's circle, farther than he did. But you got to love that. I mean, how many? He's run 7,000 races, 8,000 races. There's a reason why. And, of course, you know, Bobby's reputation. But as in any good stable, any good thing, if you don't have the help, no matter what you're doing, and Dan's been with these guys, and I'm sure you've saddled a ton of great horses over the years.
I've seen a lot of horses and a lot of different things, and got an education that's priceless.
We've got to talk about Bobby. Then we'll come circle back to Instagram and Basilica and everybody that's running Saturday. But one of the great pleasures and thrills for me with the show was getting to know Bobby and spending time. And we had the barbecue business at Saratoga, and Gary Siaka and Bobby very close, and he started bringing Bobby regularly, and Bobby loved it because it was secluded, and he hated sitting up in the boxes, and he could sit there and I, you know, have basically feed him in the afternoons, and a guy that was, I think, a lot, as Hammer suggests, Dan, a guy that was a little misunderstood. Once you got past the veneer, was as sweet and kind and generous as anybody you'd ever meet.
Absolutely, and always willing to help. And I started when I was 17.
Wow.
For him, and 22 years, you know, got to see a lot of horses. The transformation of the stable from claiming horses to better horses,
right,
when Judd Monk came. And saw a lot of things and traveled a lot. got to work with a lot of good horses and learned a lot.
What's your favorite? Was some a couple of favorite moments and memories from the time of Bobby?
Well, you know, we had to prove ourselves with the Judmont horses, and we got going right away. We picked up three, and Ron McInerney picked up three, and we started slow, but we got lucky with a few horses right away. You know, Market Street winning the Gold Cup, and Exborn the Hollywood Turf Cup, and then kept going from there. So, and then a lot of good fillies like Toussaint and Juan Destin, you know.
I remember the fillies more than anything. You had that big run, and I can't remember all their names, but we should remember her. But just was one after another. And he used to come in the office here with his, you know, with the list, and you know how he'd go, I got one for here, this one's going to go here. And, you know, lo and behold, that's where they would show up. I mean, he had a plan for every horse. We're going to go to Keeneland here, and then we're going to go here, and then we're going to go here. And then you look in the PPs 3 months later, there she is, and the plans work. But Bobby was, you know, we all know the character. And I tell you, he's the only guy that would come in the office, and he would come in when he had one in, and if you're having a bad day, he'd come in and he would just sit there. And you're trying to do your business and watch the races and, you know, make some comments in the background. Or, you know, he would come in and be pissed off. And for some reason, him and I always got along. And so when you get along with someone, it's okay to yell. So, but he would come in and we'd go at it for, you know, 30 seconds, whatever, you know, screaming, you're an idiot, and we should have done this. And people would walk in and, oh, my gosh, and they would run out of the room thinking it was, you know, the end of the world. And 10 minutes later, we're, you know, sharing a sandwich or something. But, you know, that's just the way he was. But he was one of those guys that was so sharp. And if you thought you were smarter than him, you're an idiot. And he would tell you stuff, and he would scream at you, you should have done this, you should have done that, you should have done this. And he'd just sit there, and he'd walk out of the room, and then I'd write it down and go, you know what?
He was right.
He was right. Yeah. Should have done this. This horse should have got two more pounds. Or, you know, it should have had the three of the then 2 days before so he could have prepped for. So just a student of the game. Yeah. And you didn't want to let him think that, you know, he was giving you advice, but you took it.
You didn't want to say anything stupid to him. You know what I mean? It was, he'll tell you something about a horse. And if I was on the road and had horses, and he asked me, what'd you do with this one? I said, listen, listen, listen. He says, he's gonna come up short. Guess what happened?
Came up short?
Yeah. Yeah, he was very good to learn from.
I got to add, you mentioned Toussaint, and one of the things that we should try to find this, Casey, we should try to find this in the deep archives. I called him when Toussaint passed, and actually he hadn't heard. And he started just to sort of free his soul because he really loved her, but he started to laugh telling the stories of her training and then just stopping on the backstretch, locking front legs like a mule, and right in the midst
during
of
work.
Yeah, during work.
We had to, you know, adjust our plan for her. She worked from the gate all the time.
You had to send her from the gate.
You had to go from the gate, and she wouldn't gallop, you know, the right way. So she'd go with a pony and kind of half gallop around the wrong way, and only one guy could get on her. If he was off, then she wasn't going on track. Basically, very challenging, very talented in this in the stake here at Oak Tree at 6.5. She made the little bit lead a little bit early with the Sormo, and just tried to go to the outside fence, try to stop. And you should have seen his face in the picture.
And then, of course, all she managed to do was deliver one wonderful product after another, which an honest lady being the one that I was just crazy about. And I, you know, I couldn't wait. I think maybe the first time I had Bobby on the show, which was in the when we were 4 o'clock, we were in the backyard at Saratoga, and I couldn't wait to ask him about Honest Lady because I kind of latched onto her before the Breeders' Cup at Churchill, and when she had worked in 57-4, and he said that was my fault. We screwed up. He said if she'd gone 59, she'd have won the sprint. That's what he thought.
Yeah, those kind of works were a mistake if that happened in our barn because he didn't like that. And I think they run better, you know, when they work slower. And, you know, if you saw a horse work like that, I'm not surprised that he said that was a mistake because he didn't want that.
She went up to Woodbine, right? The Atto Mile, and then cut back for the Breeders' Cup. And That was one of the great. That's when Kona Gold finally got his Breeders' Cup sprint in his fourth try. Fourth, third, second, and then he won.
And amazing, actually. They run the Kona Gold Stakes here in a couple weeks. And then, of course, Dan moved over to Jerry. When Jerry decided to, you know, let's kind of go down south. Let's play ball with the big boys for full time.
From San Francisco.
Right. And geez, how many great horses have you had since you decided to do
that? You know, one of the first horses that we got, like my first day on the job, was Heatseeker from Bobby, actually. And, you know, he won the San Anita Handicap and the Californian and Native Diver and everything. So, ironically enough, when I started with him, that was one of the first horses that we got.
Easy to make that transition. You know, I got to ask you as a perfect timing. They're going to run the Evening Jewel on Saturday, but of course, Blind Luck in one of the greatest
oaks
you'll ever see. Not that Gary Young ever wants to see it again or Cassidy, but Blind Luck up for the Hall of Fame. And I remember when the first time I saw her in person was Oaks Week, was Oaks and Derby, leading up to Oaks and Derby, and she had the patches of skin disease left over, and she looked like something that came out of the backfield.
Not overwhelming.
No, I said, "How's this horse gonna? You got to be. This is Blind Luck."
Yeah. Well, I remember if I'm thinking of the same horse, it was during Del Mar, and Jerry came into the office and said, "You know, we bought a filly, and I think she's eligible for a starter. Mm-hmm. Can you throw a starter up or something?" And Now, keep in mind, here's a guy that's won 7,000 races, and if I'm off by 1,000, you get it, a lot of races. The times that he asks for a race is very rare. And so, you know, it's one of those things you remember. I mean, how many people have asked me for a race over the years? Hundreds, and I remember this one, him coming in and saying, you know what, can you guys put up a starter? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously we did, and it went on, but you just remember, like, you know what? Jerry's asking for a race. There's something. There's got to be something going on here. And then, of course, she went
broke
on.
Broke her maiden for 40, I think, at Calder. And, you know, one thing about our horses, will travel.
Yeah, no, not afraid to ship, right? No, well, she was like a chess piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd move her all over the place.
All over the place. Right.
Never an excuse. Just ran a race every time.
Yeah. No, I think I voted for her.
With a good bunch too, you know.
Oh yeah,
ran against Cab de Grace.
Ran against the nuts.
Yeah. No, she ran against the Evening Jewel. What was wrong with Evening Jewel?
Yeah, we beat Cab de Grace every time as a 3-year-old, except for one. We had to give her 10 pounds in a cotillion, 10 pounds, and got beat a neck. But you know, she traveled all over, and Songbird did also. You know, so. She won at 7 different tracks, 5 different states, grade ones. So.
She ticked my boxes for Hall of Fame.
Always kind of the same pattern, trying to get there on Wednesday to run on Saturday, something like that. And I remember one of the first trips that I had back to New York was in 79, 80. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, we're going back like Wednesday or Thursday to run Saturday. I said, would you ever go back like a week before and work over the track? You know what he told me? He says, if he doesn't like the track, I don't want to know until the day of the race. Right?
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
I always remember that. You know?
Well, that's the hillside here, the hillside course. We don't, you know, we'll talk about it. But horses run here, and when we trained on the turf here, we never let horses go up and down the hillside or train down the hillside. And when the Breeders' Cup comes here and we run the thing, they would always ask, and I would always say, no, we're not doing it because we don't normally do it. Then we once in a while will let these guys go over the dirt. And a trainer made a great comment to a group of horsemen that were coming in there they were demanding to work down the hill. And I forget who it was, but they said, why would you want to work your horse there in the morning? There might be some guy in a lawnmower, might be something totally different that this horse is going to have in his head now when he comes down the hill for the first time, as opposed to just rolling. And, you know, 99 or all, 100% of the horses that run down this hill have never trained on it. So It's just like you're saying. Why would you want to show them something that maybe they in the morning
they're not going
like?
To encounter? Dan, on that topic, what's your reaction to for now not coming down the hill? They're gonna pause and I guess visit whatever issues. I mean, they've been doing it for 75 years, but what's your reaction to this?
They're gonna check it out and make sure that it's safe. You know, maybe. Maybe it's deeper, you know, the track is deeper than it has been, and, you know, I don't know. I trust them to, you know, get it safe before we run back on it.
Caution's the way to go.
Yeah,
now.
No, I agree. I just, it's one of those things that you just, right now, if there's a question about it, it's not worth pushing on. Let it, you know, for now, let it go. And you know, as we said with Mark Latt yesterday, and he's going to be impacted because he's got three entered for the next couple of days. And he said, you know, we'll adjust to whatever we have to adjust to.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a horseman. That's a credo.
That's what happens. You have to go with the flow, especially at this time, because everything that's all the adjustments that are being made are made in for the right reason, for safety, sure. And might as well just take the extra time and get it right.
And not just here, you know, when you think about football is different and you know, it's not like it used to be, or basketball.
That's true. Everybody's making adjustments.
Or the names,
that's true.
There's no Indians, and there's, you know, I mean, everything is different now. So
more Colonials.
Right, that's right, yeah.
The George Washington Colonials. They voted them out.
Well, and
can't make this up.
Binghamton University was the Colonials, but not because of colonial anything, because of a colonial style house where the university was founded. But they didn't do it over any outrage. They did it because being a Bearcat apparently sells more tchotchkes and hats and apparel and whatnot. The ones that bother me is like Lehigh. I mean, being the engineers. But they didn't want to be so closely associated with being, you know, an engineering mentality, so they changed it to the Mountain Hawks. I mean, come on. And even my school, Colgate, we were the Red Raiders. It wasn't an Indian reference. It was because of the maroon stripe down their pants, on the side of the pants in the 20s. A writer in New York called them the Red Raiders of the Shenango Valley, and so the nickname Red Raiders stuck. Colgate didn't even have a nickname in the 20s. They were just the maroon. And then we dropped the red at some point, leaving only Texas Tech, who we're rooting for just because they're still the Red Raiders in the NCAAs. Dan, talk a little bit about Vasilika. She looks 3-5 in the Royal Heroin.
She likes this turf, definitely. And I think when we got her, she had a very good record, and she really liked the firm courses out here and was able to, you know, have the opportunity to run in the starters, and then had all the conditions to kind of work your way up rather than try and tough competition right away. And as you work your way up, you get more and more confidence, and just took it step by step and went through all the conditions before we ran in a stake, and then just keeps getting better.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I think the first time I had Jerry on, when she won her first big stake, you could tell how tickled he was with what was happening with her. You could hear him, the laughter in his voice about, you know, we got something really good here.
And I actually saddled Skip Shot in the swaps when he beat Sydney's Candy, and I saddled Marquetry in New Hampshire when he won the $500,000 race.
Sweet.
So, I mean, looking
things.
At her form, in her form, and then seeing those horses, we had to go for her.
I love it.
It was the natural. And we were just talking about the March Madness. You won the basketball. I'm sure that is sitting high on the trophy list. But you take a look at what Dan just said, and something that Bobby used to do, and something that Bill Mott did when I was in Florida, and he's still to this day. Take advantage of your horse's conditions. He took the time. Starter, first condition, second condition, eligible for another starter. And then they came back in a classified allowance race. And then, guess what? Now let's hit the big boys and or big girls, and
she doesn't think she can lose.
Tell them about you've been around a lot of good horses and a lot of ways to prepare. what does a confidence factor have? How much of a factor is that in a horse as opposed to going out and getting their head kicked in, you know, numerous times and then asking them to do it again and again as opposed to finding an easy spot and giving them that confidence to move on?
You know, when she's winning those races and even carrying 129 pounds one time, winning easy and everything, she doesn't think she can get beat. You know, and when you step up, they talk about a tougher competition, but she doesn't know that. She doesn't know that. So,
and then you also settled in on the mile. I mean, that which is always fine. Love talking to trainers about turf horses in particular, about because there's such a range. I mean, but from five to, you know, to 12 furlongs, you've got this huge spread, and literally a half a furlong, you know, out of their scope is the difference sometimes, and it you kind of felt, you know, more and more like this was her wheelhouse, and you've been seeking those out steadily.
Well, the mile and eighth, she's won a greatest they can, yep, a mile and a quarter, so we're good and with all distances.
Well, and yeah, then with the Breeders' Cup being here, you know, will there be any more experimentation, do you think, this year with her going longer, or do you think you'll?
I think the Gamely would be a good next spot. You know, that's May 27th, I believe, mile and eighth on the turf, and then we'll go from there. I don't know if we really have to ship to, you know, stay on schedule, but we'll see.
Nice. Got to ask, of course, about Instagram, and had thought maybe about the wood, and then you guys kind of decided to stay home. The enforced winter break in concert with Larry Best's philosophy and his approach as he develops his stable. Some thoughts about Instagram in here. The Derby.
I think that was going to turn out to be a really good prep because it was a one-turn mile and really get a lot of fitness out of that. And he was off for 7 months and did a few things that he hadn't done before. Down on the inside, off the pace, got a little bit tired the last part. But I think you move up a lot from that race.
The question, Dan, that's being asked, or not asked as much as floated, is that he might long-term be more of a middle-distance horse than a classic distance horse. I mean, you got to take these shots,
right,
but
right.
What's your sense?
Just like everybody else, you know, we'll see. You know he's going to run a good race, and then we'll see how far he can go. But we don't know till we try.
Absolutely.
You
know,
can't
they only
say,
get one pass
I
at
know,
this.
I know he's, you know.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Well, and this is the time. I mean, you got to. That's why Larry Best is spending the money he's spending.
Sitting on a big race and got the advantage of having run a week earlier, which helps, you know. So we'll. He's ready for his best race.
And Moore Ice, who hadn't really been rumored for this, and at least I had not seen, his presence in the race.
He's been running really well on the turf. You know, if you look back, he beat Omaha Beach on the turf.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll try him on the dirt. I think he's only run on the dirt once in his debut, so we'll give him a shot on the dirt and go from there.
Well. And once again, you wonder why guys like this, Jerry, and that win a lot of races. Well, you know why? Because they run.
Yeah.
It's a six-horse field for $1 million, and things happen. And it's the old, if you're not in it, you can't win it trick. But, you know, guys like Jerry, they're put for a race. Once they're in, they're running. And, right? Every race that you won, you weren't sure you were going to win, right? A lot of surprises out there, but you're glad you throw them in. And they're fit, and they're ready to go, and why not take a shot for $1 million in your own backyard?
And I want to ask you about the maiden, the Bullion, moving to the grass, going the mile, second start.
Ran good first time out. You know, you can always expect a Ghost Sapper to run good on the turf, you know. I would think.
Well, and he, you know, he's got, this is Mosler's brother, Air Vice Marshal. I mean, this is a nice family that he comes from, Bullion, and this is Kenwood Racing. Jerry's listed as well as a partner. Came out of OBS March last year, and out of an Arch Mare. So the turf
should be fine.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. Should be good. He's training good. Training very well here.
There's been a couple of nice prices. Obviously, John White will get the morning line probably later today, but it seems like Figueroa, using Figueroa on some of these price shots.
Figueroa is a jockey that never gives up. You know, he's always good for the lazy horses. You know, he's going to ride them all the way to the finish. He doesn't give up. You know, he's hard riding.
On that topic, the stick issue. As a trainer, how do you view the potential for a hustling rider to maybe not be able to use a stick for any prodding?
I'm going to have to go with the riders, whatever they say. You know what I mean? Just I trust them, whatever their opinion is. I trust them. You know, that's not. I don't know because I've never ridden a horse. You know, I trust them, whatever they say.
But that, which leads me to the final question: how'd you get on the racetrack? What? How'd you wander in?
Well, I was a fan. You know, the first time I was here, Majestic Prince won the Derby.
Wow.
In 69.
How great is that?
You know, your secretary, and then we went, came up. I grew up in San Diego. We drove up to see Riva Ridge and the Hollywood Derby and everything, and wanted to get in the business. Wanted to work for Bobby. Because we were fans, you know.
Well, and he came out of the grandstand.
Yeah, yeah. So I got to start working with him in '76, and worked my way up. But
here you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure at some point you had maybe when Bobby passed, did you think about going out?
Well, I still am. Hopefully,
yeah.
Someday.
All right.
When the time is right.
All right. I can't tell you how pleased I am that you wandered by and Hammer flagged you down. And, you know, because we all – one of the nice things about California, the way races are announced when the winner's circle, they always acknowledge the assistant
and put the name in the
program. And the program,
right?
which is great.
Should be done around. And don't kid yourself, Dan and I, you might look like we're buddies, but we're very big rivals in the NASCAR pool. So that's a lot of topic of discussion. Takes the edge off when, you know, you don't have to talk about horses all the time.
I love it. Dan, best of luck this weekend.
Good meeting you.
A real pleasure.
Thank you.
A real pleasure. Dan Ward, tremendous. Tony Black is in the background. Tony's been listening, I think. Is Tony there?
Still here, Steve. Can you believe how quiet I was?
You are. That's not like you at all.
No, Kylie put a gag on me. She said, shut up and don't say a word. She just took the gag off. I'm like a horse that needs a tongue tie. But what an interesting guy. Last year when Dan Ward came with Jerry's Horses to Philadelphia Park Racetrack on Cotillion and Derby Day, I wanted to go over there and meet him because I've heard so much about him and couldn't get over there to meet him. But I know he'll be at Parks this year with the Million Dollar Cotillion and the Million Dollar Derby with something because they have horses that fit right in every place. And I'm going to make sure I go over there to meet him. And what an educated guy to the game and educated in the right way. And I liked his last comment. I think I'll leave that whip issue up to the riders. I never rode a horse. Even though the people out there making that never rode horses are trying to impose these issues on us. And Hammer, I want to say one thing. You are absolutely bulletproof.
Well, hold on. He's putting the headset on. He just took a picture. He just took a picture with Dan, and there we go. And now Hammer's back too.
Hammer, oh, yeah, I just want to say, you didn't hear all the other things I just said because I want to meet Dan when he gets to Park.
But and he gave a thumbs up on that, Tony. He said he absolutely will be back in Philadelphia.
I know. With million-dollar races and the kind of horses they have, you know, they fit right in the category. But, Hammer, I just want to say one thing to you. You are absolutely bulletproof. You have not, I guess people have said you dodged the bullet, or maybe the bullet would have never fired if you were still involved with them in the way that you were. Maybe that bullet wouldn't have gotten fired and snowballed into what it snowballed into. But, you know, sometimes people throw a negative at you and it turns out to be a positive. They did you a favor.
Well, Tony, you know,
No, they did you a favor.
You don't know. You don't know at the time, and you know, things happened for a reason, and after I got let go here, I had a ton of phone calls and well-wishers, and at that point, the next person that told me everything was going to be fine, I was, you know, I was about ready to wring their neck. But, you know, I know they meant it with good. And as it turned out, personally, yes, I'm not here. I'm not going through what they're going through. And I know the stress was getting to me at the end there anyway. And I sleep at night as my people say, well, what's the biggest difference? And that's the biggest difference. I sleep at night. And,
you get a chance to recharge your batteries with a
recharge your absolutely, and you know that, and you don't get a break in this game unless you're forced to take one. And the classic line was my wife after a couple of months said, "Hey, you're nice again."
when I quit riding, I got that line from my wife after going through two others and divorces, but the third one says, "Well, you're sure a lot easier to get along with now that you're not going out there and banging heads with these guys." But you know what? One door closes. An old rider told me many years ago when I first started, and you know, kids that first start, they lose mounts and they get taken off of winners. And kids, when you're first kid riding, you know, you got to get used to that. He said, "Listen, son," and this is old Chris Rogers with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, you know, in the jocks room. It was, you know, 1970. Listen, and he used to call me kid. "Hey, kid, one door closes, another door opens, kid. Don't worry about it. Go on to the next one. Get over it." And I never forgot it. Even though he had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, he's blowing smoke in my face. Didn't matter, because I grew up with a father that smoked. If he wasn't smoking a pipe, he was smoking cigars. If he wasn't smoking cigars, he was smoking two packs of Cools or Marlboros a day.
Oh, that's great. But so the one tough thing is watching this from afar with, you know, people you've become your friends and associates over the course of a long period of time, kind of watching what they go through. And it was interesting. I was thinking yesterday as we were here looking down at people I've known and seen, you know, every day of my life for the past 15, 20 years. Even as close as I was to it and as close as I am to the situation, I'm not in their shoes, so I really don't know what's going through their heads, still here and living it. Living it from afar, you kind of get a feeling of it, but what these guys have gone through. And it just shows the resiliency of the racetracker. Can take a lot of punches, and we're going to come through the end of this thing as well. And, you stick together here. We were just explaining it is a community that fights together and heals together. And I think they've really seen it. You've seen it here, Steve.
No doubt.
There's no doubt. Nobody's pointing fingers. Nobody's doing anything. We're just trying to get the rails train back on the track.
Yeah, you know, racetrackers are very resilient. I understand that. And I've been on the racetrack since I was a little kid I was born in 51. I was on a horse farm, boarding training center, and was in a racing area. And I've seen what racetrackers can go through and survive and stick together. And it seems like at hard times they even stick together better than when everything's going smooth and they're out there cutting each other's throat and competing to make a buck. But, the downside of this is the public perception, and we all have an opinion about it, and I just think we got to get through it, because this isn't just a Santa Anita problem right now. It's turned out to be a racing industry negative. So we'll get through it, and we have to rebuild, and we got to be smarter in the future to do the right things before these things happen, or while these things are happening, if there is a negative that is facing us, to react to it quickly and make sure that we do the right things. I looked like Gwen went out there, and I saw where you weren't there, and the track superintendent wasn't there, and a new announcer, and I thought to myself, this is kind of stupid, but I said, I'm going to blame it on the new announcer. It's about as accurate as blaming it on whips and Lasix.
Yeah.
So, it's just a situation that we'll all get through. But it's very visible right now, and we all have to get through it, and we all have to do a better job at putting the positives out there. Now, let's get on to the loose horse system. I even learned something when you were talking about the loose horse system, which loose horses, that's a horrifying experience for everyone involved, and I've seen head-ons. I've been involved in close calls and one impact situation. I had finally gotten Parks to put in an audible loose horse system after years and years of requesting it, and then they had a loose horse run into one of John Service's horses were got hurt. One of them euthanized the other one that the girl was on. She got banged up real bad. And I'll never forget the last, they used to have just a blinking light. And the last email I sent prior to the accident, I said, the loose horse alert system must be for the hearing impaired. It's just for the sighted, a blinking light. And they finally put in an audible system, you know, a siren. But I also like something I learned, you know, where you have the clockers connected to the PA system, where they have good view of the entire racetrack, of course.
Right.
And if they can, this is going to be my next request, you know, over there. And very few tracks have this, where the clockers can alert the riders where
right.
the loose horse is, which is really, you know, and I've gotten on thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of horses and been involved in all these close calls or been out there when they've had accidents or close calls. That is really something I never thought of. Clocker has an oversight of the whole racetrack, an overview of the whole racetrack, and can alert the riders. And if you can alert the riders, it stops them from looking around and maybe not paying attention to what's going on with their horse trying to spot the loose horse. It's a great idea. California does some things that are really helpful.
We probably, God, I'm thinking 8-10 years ago, this idea evolved because they originally were up in the steward stand. And the one thing about the clockers, we have, there's six or seven of them up there in the booth doing it. And guess what? They're the ones here. They're paying attention. You can't give this job to anybody else that's maybe looking at the track 50% of the time. Their job is to go out there and identify horses as they come on and then scan and look at horses that are working. So they're the ones that made it sense. Just go ahead and give them the button. And then once they got the talk, you know, we made sure that they could be hooked up to Trevor's or the announcer's booth up there. And then a couple years ago, the stewards requested we find another spot for them, you know, because they were taking their area for the in the mornings. The first thing we did was we're not moving them until we can get the sound down there to the new area. And it's funny, we had the old clocker that just retired, and she would get a little excited about, you know, getting the word out, and you know, and a few times that I'd be out here that you'd hear about it, and she might have to tell her, slow down. The most important thing is, you know,
keep
it's
calm.
The eighth pole. Where is it, and what direction are they heading in? That's the two things that you do.
Right.
You're not calling a race. Just give those two things, say it a couple times, take a deep breath. But, and it's hard to imagine, Tony, like you said, why didn't we have this before?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really takes it, because I mean you're on horseback. You see the red light go off or the siren. I mean you're immediately, or even if it's hard to believe that we didn't even have the siren first too. It was just the red light going on. And all of a sudden you got your head down, and you know there's a pretty good warning system as it is, because the first person yells and you know they yell to the next guy and yell to the next guy.
And that and at Churchill, I can tell you, John Nichols, John will call it out where it is, and then Beth is on the walkie-talkie to the intercom, to the people on the intercom. And so, you know, John says, loose horse, quarter pole, wrong way. And then Beth tells, and then 2 seconds later, it's over the intercom. It's just an extra piece of information, so that, as opposed to a lot of times you'll see the riders, they're craning their necks, they're looking behind them, they're looking ahead of them, and if there isn't that kind of information to add, and you just don't, Tony, when you said, you know, you've had your share of close calls and a couple of contacts, you just don't know, because the horse can veer at any second when they're coming the wrong way.
Right, and you know what? In so many cases, when you do have a head on, I've been in races there was a horse running the wrong way, and we were aware of it, of course. You know, he fell leaving the gate, went around the gate, and going a distance to ground, didn't go out to shoot, and came up the racetrack. You know, I can remember being next to two riders. I'm in the middle. We're on the lead. And I finally said, hey, Hector, we got a loose one coming at us. He's at the 3/8 pole. We're at the 3/4 pole. But I look ahead. You know, some riders, you know, you're not looking ahead a lot in a race. But that happens, the same scenario happens in galloping horses. You're not looking way ahead. You're looking a lot of times at your horse's head because you want to see what his ears are doing, because his ears are his way of communicating with you. And then you're looking peripherally, and you're looking just a little ahead to see if there's anything on the racetrack. But it seems like such a simple no-brainer to put the PA system in the hands of the clockers to see have a view of the whole racetrack. And I never thought of this. You know, it just seems like a no-brainer, and it's simple. Whether you have a buzzer or a siren makes no difference. But what would really add to safety is them having the overview of the racetrack and warning the riders, you know, because some riders, an exercise person, are more aware than others, and that you're never going to change. You know, that's just the nature of getting on horses and getting them around. And I'm gonna see if we can get something done at parks. And
nice.
I don't think there's any other tracks in the Mid-Atlantic state that have this type of a system.
I learned something, Hammer.
Thank you. Spread the
word. Now, Mama Tate have a little trouble because the clockers are on the backside.
They're on the backside.
It's the craziest thing. They're roughly around the half mile pole, and
they can put lights and sirens. They can put a speaker.
No, they can. They can. And they're on it. But it's the craziest thing. That's where they clock from. And they come
I forgot about that. Yeah, they stand in that trainer's booth and they clock right from there. Yeah, you're right.
It's the craziest thing in the world.
I didn't know that.
And these guys are going. That's Gate and Tyrone and all of their. They just roll. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. But hopefully you can get this done and
good job.
And you know, have them be a little more alert in the mornings. I got a question, Tony. I'm trying to think. Have you ridden here before?
Yeah, he's come out here. Sure.
You've come. You've got it with a good mare. With a good.
Yeah, he's been out here.
My Juliet. I wound up.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about. Was that a Hollywood Park?
No, I rode at Hollywood Park, but that was at Santa Anita. Because I'll never forget on New Year's Day, my brother and I had a car accident. Went through the windshield of the car. Had about 90 stitches in my face, and my Juliet in on Saturday New Year or whatever it was, New Year's Day, and I got out there. To get licensed, and the stewards looked, or whoever the licensing procedure was, says, have you ridden recently in that condition? My head was as big as a basketball. I said, oh, yeah, I rode on Thursday or whatever day. And I got like 90 stitches in my mouth, my head, my nose was busted. I got packed up my bled the whole way out there, and won on my Juliet and Lafitte Road, just a kick. I'll never forget it, and finished second in the race, and my Juliet won. And she was a great mare, one of the greatest mares I ever rode. Not that I've been on a lot of great ones, but she was a sprinting son of a gun. She beat the boys, she beat the girls, she set track records. But yeah, that was quite an experience, because I got out there and I was so impressed, because never saw it, in the beautiful snow-capped mountains, and it was like cool, pretty cool in the morning. You know,
it's cool right now.
But by the afternoon, it was 60 degrees.
Yeah.
Man, no wonder people stay out here. This is living. You know, you got to wear a jacket in the morning and a T-shirt to ride in the afternoon.
It's the weather is the great equalizer, I'll tell you. Every time we think about packing up and going, it's another nice day.
Well, Tony, I've got a couple of things that I'll save for you, including since my Juliet came up, I got a place where this happened, because I've been traveling so much. But I ran into somebody who trained her before.
I'm trying to think who trained her before. Gene Euster had her when I rode her, but
right before Gene.
Oh, I know it like I know my own name, and I can't think.
Well, I came across something.
Ripley was now.
I can't. I've got to go through my notes, because on these travels the last month or so, it might have been at Tampa. I came across, met somebody that was part of the team before Gene got her, and it was kind of I had made the note to bring it up with you, and I've got to get the complete story before we do that. So,
well, even Rusty Arnold was connected to her, and he was kind of running the shed for Gene at the time. But then
how about
there Rusty. I'll never forget. First I met Rusty, he was probably rubbing a few and running the shed and helping Gene out, and was connected in some way with my Juliet just because she was under the shed row, and so was he.
Did he have hair at the time? Did he have hair then?
Yeah, he had hair. We never called him George. We called him Russ. Hey, Russ. Hey, Russ. Russ, hey. Get that mare ready. I got a bunch of horses to get on, Rusty. Come on. Don't be holding me up.
Too funny. I love it. Tony, let me got to get to Haskin, and
sure.
we'll talk about the weekend races.
Right, though. And Hammer, it was nice talking to you. Steve, you keep up the good work, and I always enjoy being involved with you, and you do one hell of a job. We need more people doing the job, or maybe not more people. We just got to keep making sure that you keep doing the job that you do, because it puts a positive word out there for us backside personnel.
Well, we're doing our best. Tony, appreciate it. We will talk next week, and we'll be awfully close. Watch those preps this weekend, the Derby, the Bluegrass, and the Wood, and you got to start to form your Derby opinion.
You know, jocks are the worst handicappers around. But they're always full of opinions. So
that's for sure. Exactly.
Just lacking of handicapping. But never lacking
in opinion. Too funny. Unbelievable. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a quick break.
Great to talk to you, Tony. We'll see you again on the next trip back there for sure.
A buzz of activity here, by the way, and a couple of groups came through, but the weather has turned steamy and misty. A little bit of rain, but that's actually good for the track to keep
it's
the moisture.
Not rain. Don't come on.
No, it's not rain. It's just misty. It's just misty. I said that we had the low cloud cover. Well, I put up the video of the loose horse, and people can see how hazy it and kind of overcast it is. Let's take a quick break because we went 50 minutes there from Dan Ward straight through with Tony. Steve Haskin next, and we'll get Steve's thoughts on the Florida Derby, a little thought about Pliska Parfait, and his moving on to Derby, as we talked about with Brendan Walsh, and then, of course, the three preps. Steve Haskin next at the races. We're at Santa Anita.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.